Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Welcome in, ladies and gentlemen, to another edition of the Pony Stampede podcast. Thanks for listening. I'm Billy Embody. SMU lands in the college football playoff top 25 ranking for the first time in school history, coming in at number 25 overall in the college football playoff rankings that were released Tuesday night in between a couple of big-time college basketball games, I might add, that were pretty enjoyable to watch. So for you guys that saw SMU come in at number 25, they come in right behind Navy at number 24, which I thought was certainly interesting. 22 is Boise State, number 21 Memphis, 20 Cincinnati, and then just kind of rounding out your top four playoff teams right now, number 4, Penn State, number 3, Alabama, number 2, LSU, and number 1, Ohio State. So we're going to react to the first college football playoff rankings and kind of how this one kind of went down and certainly where SMU stands in all this and kind of what it means. So let's start with SMU. And for me, this one really just kind of says, all right, you're in it, and you're certainly in striking distance for the group of five spot in the college football New Year's Six bowl game, so the Cotton Bowl. So if SMU wins out and gets some help from Memphis, who would need to lose to Cincinnati, I would say is the most likely thing. I think SMU is going to end up jumping Boise State in the end. So if you look at SMU's schedule down the stretch, they could beat Navy, which would be a top 25 win. They could beat Cincinnati again, which would give them an equal win over, or it would give them a win over a top 25 team in a conference championship game that had beaten, theoretically, if SMU gets to this point, another top 25 team that SMU lost to by a touchdown on the road in Memphis. So for me, that gives SMU the chance to have two really quality wins down the stretch. East Carolina won't help them. Tulane even right now might not help them in the grand scheme of things. But for me, SMU with the opportunity to win on the road against a top 25 team. Now we'll see if Navy stays there, if they do indeed lose to Notre Dame down the stretch here. But overall, I think SMU is in a fine position to end up still playing in the Cotton Bowl and kind of having all of their goals still ahead of them. Because, look, if Boise State ends up unscathed throughout the rest of the schedule, they're not going to have a quality win left to kind of add to that mix. So for SMU to have two top 25 opportunities potentially with Cincinnati in the conference title game most likely, and Memphis in the conference, and Navy at the end of the season, that's big. I think when people look at SMU, and while they dropped a whole 10 spots realistically from the AP to the college football playoff, I think that's more of just kind of setting the table right now. I think they did a terrible job looking at quality wins when you have Navy in front of SMU at this point, and I don't think SMU got the credit that it deserved for what it was doing when they lost that game to Memphis and what they've done throughout the season so far. A win on the road at TCU, something at the time top 25 Texas team couldn't do. And look, how that win over TCU looks down the stretch, we'll kind of see how the Horned Frogs go. But if you look at what SMU has in front of it, it has a chance to beat a potential top 25 team in Navy, potential top 25 team in Cincinnati, all likelihood a top 25 team. And that would make them the AAC championship, the champion, if they can win out and Memphis drops a game. And that makes them as a logical pick for the Cotton Bowl. I don't think Boise's schedule and and strength of schedule is anything to write home about. Nothing really that they should get credit for. They beat a bad Florida State team that ended up firing their coach. And so when you look at that and you look at SMU playing all FBS teams this year, Arkansas State on the road to open the season, North Texas, who has been up and down but has talent, and just getting credit for doing some of the things that they've done throughout the year, beating a Temple team that beat Memphis, doing those things, I think they're in prime spot to rise back up the rankings if they're able to get some of these wins down the stretch and win out and still rep the conference in the AAC title game and then in the Cotton Bowl. And for me, my top six, just kind of looking at things, I think LSU should be number one, and I'm sure I'm going to get a ton of reaction on that one from you guys. But look, three top 10 wins for LSU so far this year, teams that were ranked in the top 10 at the time. Texas has completely fallen off, but they've been dealt with a rash of injuries. I don't think they lose a TCU if they're at least at full health, which they were against LSU outside of the running back position when they played them early in the season. So I don't think that win is getting enough credit on the road in Austin. And then Ohio State, I think the only impressive win to me is beating Wisconsin the way they did. I don't think a Nebraska win on the road is that impressive with the way Nebraska's played this year. I don't think when you're Ohio State, a Cincinnati win is even that impressive to me, especially just kind of early on, you know, just being able to take care of business the way they did. And there's just a certain level of athlete that is at an Ohio State, that's at an Alabama, an LSU, a Georgia, that for the most part, those teams like Cincinnati, SMU, Memphis, they're just not going to be able to compete. And I'm sorry, that's just the way it is. Top 25 teams or not, there's just a gap. And Clemson too, I forgot about them. But there's just a gap between the top five teams in the country in my mind, especially the top four in my mind, in my top four, than the rest of the country. So I've got Alabama number three, Penn State at number four because of their resume, Clemson number five. I think they end up in the college football playoff, though. Ohio State and Penn State still have to play each other. And then I've got Oregon at six. Their only loss is an Auburn game on a neutral site far away from home in the final minute. And from there, they've been on a tear. They've got a great quarterback. I don't think that gets enough credit, just how well Justin Herbert's playing. So for me, that's my top six, just for you guys to know. I think Oklahoma can make a play back into the conversation, even with as bad of a loss as it is to K-State, and in that regard. So I think for SMU right now, they're fine. They're in a good spot. Were they a little disrespected? Yes. I don't think Navy should be ahead of them. I don't even think Boise should be ahead of them in a way. I think it should probably be 23 SMU, 24 Boise State, 25 Navy, if you have them in the top 25 at all. So that's kind of where my head's at with the college football playoff. SMU looking ahead to Tulsa, East Carolina, homecoming 11 a.m. Central on ESPN2, a chance to just get back on track, to take care of business, be able to kind of handle your business and show that, you know, you're not going to let a game like the one at Memphis beat you twice. That's the big thing, and that's why I like the messaging for this SMU team so much, is they've been able to kind of put things behind them, whether it's been a win or whether it's a game like Memphis. This will be their first test to put a game behind them, and I think SMU is going to be just fine handling East Carolina. East Carolina's been playing better. They had a great offensive performance against Cincinnati, but I think SMU is going to be able to take care of business. We'll talk more about that game with Steven Igo of Hoist the Colors later in the week on that podcast previewing the game. I do want to get to SMU basketball. The Mustangs tipped off against Jacksonville State last night. As you're listening to this, I'm recording Wednesday morning, and got the win over the Gamecocks to start the season 1-0. I've got some takeaways from that. We're going to talk about that and a lot more on the other side of the break of the Pony Stampede podcast.
Hey, I'm Brett Podolsky, co-founder of The Farmer's Dog. We make fresh food for dogs. We started the company when we saw what a huge difference it made in my own dog, Jada, when she stopped eating ultra-processed kibble and started eating fresh, whole food. The Farmer's Dog food isn't fancy. It's just real food delivered to your door in pre-portioned packs. It's better for them and easier for you.
Get 50% off your first box at thefarmersdog.com/podcast. That's thefarmersdog.com/podcast.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend, or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Pony Stampede podcast. Thanks for listening as we continue to recap and look at SMU's win over Jacksonville State to start the regular season off in Moody Coliseum Tuesday night. Look, I think when you look at this win for SMU, a bunch of newcomers get action as Tyson Jolly makes his debut and is really, really impressive, especially on the glass and what he was able to do on the offensive rebounding end and just overall. I mean, he was outstanding, I thought, and kind of lived up to the fact that he was so highly touted coming out of the junior college ranks and SMU getting him as one of the top junior college signees in the country. And so that was my main takeaway from it. I mean, look, whenever you're not going to have Kendrick Davis and Darius McNeil eligible right away, at least Tyson Jolly showed that he can at least produce, at least be a legitimate option to step up and kind of carry that load, because he's going to need to. It's a team that, when you watch last night in the 74-65 win for SMU, I don't think you sat there and said, okay, all right, CJ White inspired any sort of confidence with himself coming off of the bench for SMU as a guard and as a backup point guard. You had Charles Smith who came out and had an early three and his only three of the night, and then at times kind of rushed some shots with two other you know, 3-point attempts on his 2-for-6 night. He had 5 points, but was the only SMU player that was in the minus column in terms of differential and point differential. So all other SMU players had a positive, you know, differential plus minus wise while they were on the floor, except for Charles Smith IV. So I mean, regardless of if he's talented, which he is, that's not something you love to see. And outside of Everett Ray and Tyson, outside of Everett Ray, he was last on the team in terms of minutes, which I thought was interesting. I think, look, when CJ White had, you know, went 1-for-3 overall, over 2 from 3, he rushed a shot, but he also had 3 assists on the night. He had 3 steals in 25 minutes. He was a +6, but I think sometimes when you have an athlete like Charles Smith and you saw him fly in there for a rebound in his time there, I think he missed it actually, but he did fly in there. I remember seeing him kind of come through the air because you could see that hair. I think sometimes you've got to let athleticism kind of learn on the go and see how it goes, because I think in terms of who's got the upside this season to contribute a little bit more, Charles Smith is that guy for me outside of, you know, when you look at C.J. White and Charles Smith. Emmanuel Bandamel started off well. I thought he cut to the lane a couple times and had 2 good baskets, but overall, 3-for-10, 0-for-4 from three-point range. He did grab 5 rebounds on the night and committed 2 turnovers. He had the second-highest plus-minus rating on the team, +10 in his 28 or 26 minutes of action. But another storyline for me is Fran Hunt. He crashed the glass really well, was a rebound short of a double-double, had 6 offensive boards, which was tops on the team, with Jolly right behind him with 5. He was aggressive. He didn't have a terrific night shooting the ball. He was 5 of 12 and 0 for 2 from 3, and so his shot still needs some work, but I thought he was pretty impressive, and he was tops on the team in plus-minus. I think that's kind of a continuation of what we saw from him last year, and sometimes just good things happen when Fran Hunt was put into the game last year. And as we kind of discussed, I thought a lot of times last year he was taken out too early, or you know, penalized for taking a shot and missing. And so for him to get that type of, you know, action, I think, and have that type of impact on the game was pretty nice. So was pleased with Fran Hunt and kind of watching where he's come. Isaiah Mike was excellent. He had the second on the team in scoring and tied for, he was 4th on the team in rebounds with 5. He did have 4 fouls, so not exactly what you want to see, but led the team with 4 assists in 27 minutes and was a +7 and only committed 1 turnover. So I thought overall Isaiah Mike was strong and continued his strong play. But look, I think when you have a team like Jacksonville State have this type of success that they did on the offensive glass, it's concerning. For sure. I think missing Everett Ray out there with his size, even he played 8 minutes of action. I mean, when you're trying to get somebody ready to go, and Tim Jankovic kind of said that was his regret. He said he wished he could have played him more. It was just kind of the flow of the game that led to him as his limited minutes, the only player that didn't reach double-digit minutes. But I expect to see him more against New Orleans on a week from the season opener on Tuesday night in Moody. But when you give up 13 offensive boards to a team like Jacksonville State that didn't have really any sort of size, that was a big concern, I think, for me as you get into the non-conference play when some of the better teams you start to face come in and hit the glass hard and do all of those things. That was a big concern. And it's stuff you can clean up. But I didn't think they were rebounds that were kind of flukes or things like that. They just ended up just grabbing them. And so they've got a lot of work to do cleaning up that. I thought they did a good job cleaning up the turnovers that they had in the first half. I think they had 8. But on the flip side of that, SMU was pretty disruptive for Jacksonville State, forcing 19 turnovers throughout the entire game. That was really impressive. And defensively, they were able to hold them to just 23 of 56. So it got better in the second half. They gave up, you know, 45% from the field. So the two halves kind of flipped. SMU held them to 37% in the first half. And then in the second half, they shot 45%. SMU shot 48% in the first half, 39% in the second. They kind of went into a lull when they faced the press. And that's going to be an issue. If Kendrick Davis isn't eligible and isn't able to go, that's going to be something to watch all year. And when you watch the SMU team with Jimmy Witt at the point guard and Jamal McMurray, it was the year that Shake Milton was out for much of the season. That was really, really rough when you watched SMU break a press. They were a lot better at it last year. I think the story was kind of out on SMU and how to stop them, and stopping them on the press was a part of that. This year, they're going to have to work on it. And that's no disrespect to Tyson Jolly. He's a terrific athlete. But right now, with what they have at the point guard position, not only with the youth of, you know, CJ White, Manuel Bandamel being sophomores, and Tyson Jolly being a newcomer, you're going to have to really work on this so that everybody's on the same page. They're able to break the press and they don't get into the kind of lull that they got late in the second half when, you know, USF ended up bringing it to an 8-point game with just over 2 minutes to go. But overall, I mean, you get through game one with a win, which is important. The newcomers scored 32 of SMU's 74 points. Jolly led the way with 21, and then Bandamel added 6, and Charles Smith added 5. And they shared the ball pretty well, assisted on 15 of 26 made baskets. So overall, I thought it was kind of what we expected. It wasn't anything to write home about by any means, but you get through a season opener. You now have a week until your next game, which is against New Orleans on Tuesday night in Moody Coliseum, 7 o'clock on ESPN3. And you're kind of able to just move on and kind of get going with the rest of your season, and now you have something to take a look at and kind of assess where you're at and what you're, you know, able to do as a team without Kendrick Davis and without Darius McNeil. And to touch on those two guys, look, I've talked with a bunch of sources and I've kind of done some digging on what the status is, because we're seeing around the country anywhere from, you know, players being denied and then they're appealing and then they're getting denied on their appeal. And then you're also seeing players that just haven't gotten a decision. And sources continue to tell me that SMU hasn't gotten that initial decision. And so, and they harped on it too. They said, no, we're not waiting on a waiver, or we're not waiting on a appeal, and we just haven't said anything. We are waiting for the decision. So right now, as it stands, let's say, and I believe this, that Darius McNeil is going to have a tough time getting a waiver. That's my opinion. I just don't think his case is as compelling as maybe a Kendrick Davis, who TCU is supporting the claim for SMU. But let's say Darius McNeil gets denied. So you look at Darius McNeil. If he got denied today on Wednesday, SMU would have 7 days to file an appeal. From then, it takes 7 days to get an answer back. The NCAA must give an answer within 7 days of you filing the appeal. So let's say you got denied today. SMU filed the formal appeal on Friday. So, and part of the reason why I say that in terms of the couple of days is because if you get denied, you have to come up with a new, you have to come up with a new stance or an additional stance to say, hey, wait a second, here's the hardship, but here's even more detail about the hardship to show you that it was a hardship and that you shouldn't deny it. So if SMU gets denied on Wednesday, puts that together relatively quickly, submits it on Friday, then at the earliest, or at the latest, he's looking like he'd be able to play. So if a week from Friday, he'd be able to play for Jackson State on the 16th. So that's another game that SMU could be without Darius McNeil for. Kendrick Davis, on the other hand, he's got a slightly better chance, and SMU does feel confident that they like where they stand with Kendrick Davis's waiver. And Tim Jankovic has gone on a record saying he's confident on both of them. But I think the one that they really feel confident on is Kendrick Davis, the TCU transfer. And him being a point guard, a true point guard, distributor, quick, tough, defensive-minded, and being able to run the show will help the press, will help Tyson Jolly move to the two. That would be such a big addition. If you think about Kendrick Davis and Tyson Jolly being your 1-2 combo after what you watch Friday night, or not Friday night, Tuesday night, you got to feel a lot better about SMU's offense and just kind of their defense overall and their tenacity on the court. And you're able to put those two side by side with Isaiah Mike and then Ferron Hunt and Ethan Chagui out there. That's a pretty good starting five. Still don't feel good about the bench overall. Want to see guys just produce a lot better in every kind of scenario for the most part that are coming off the bench. Ferron Hunt and Tyson Jolly are kind of your guys that really produced in terms of guys that haven't produced in a SMU uniform at a real, real high level to start. You know what you've got with Isaiah Mike. You generally know what Ethan Chagui is, and he was kind of exactly what he is in the season opener, but those are your kind of four guys right now. And from there, I don't think you feel a ton of confidence in everyone else. That's just kind of me talking out loud. So if Kendrick Davis was to get denied too, that could be another game that you missed with the New Orleans one. And then if you think about it, if they haven't gotten a decision as of Tuesday, if you kind of fast forward it a couple days and maybe they need more time to get Kendrick's, you know, appeal done. Because here's the thing, guys. And people would say, oh, why don't they file it right away? This is your last chance. You got to make sure it's right. And if you've got denied on a case that you feel pretty strongly about, you're going to have to put more effort into it and finding even more compelling reasons to get them. People are going to say, well, why didn't they have it in the first place? Because nobody knows what the NCAA is exactly looking for in these scenarios. SMU has the support of TCU in this one for Kendrick to be immediately eligible. They feel like they have a good case as to why he had to leave TCU. And if they don't get it on the first run, then look, they're going to have to come up with additional reasons that he needed to leave TCU and that he should be eligible right away for SMU, which is interesting because from what we've discussed in the past, the reasons would be wasn't treated well. TCU's coach Jamie Dixon has kind of been, you know, for just not great to a lot of his players. Mass exodus in the offseason. You can kind of read the writing on the wall there. But then TCU has to sign off on that reasoning. And an athletic department isn't going to sign off on another one saying, hey, your coach was terrible to this player. He ran him off. Thanks for supporting it, but will you guys say that he was terrible to him as well and ran him off? So that's kind of the deal with SMU's appeal. They'll have to get creative and find a reason, if it does come to an appeal, as to why Kendrick Davis should be eligible. So it's kind of an interesting thing there. TCU has to sign off and be vetted on that reason to support the claim. So it'll be interesting to see kind of how it goes down. And so realistically, I mean, as this thing kind of drags out, I mean, it could stretch into Monday against when you go on the road at Evansville, and I, you know, it all the way to November 18th. I mean, when you look at it, we sit on the sixth right now. If you don't get word until the end of the week, then you submit your appeal maybe early next week. Then they've got to have a decision in 7 days. That puts you past both Jackson State and Evansville. So it's a kind of a precarious situation for SMU to be in when it comes to these waivers that they're requested. But look, guys, talked enough about that. We've beaten to death the waivers on the board. I did post some VIP tidbits on kind of some of the things I've heard around the country that, you know, with other colleges dealing with this. So if you haven't checked that out, I encourage you to check out a Pony Stampede subscription. Try free for 7 days. Give us a shot, because look, you'll get our coverage through the East Carolina game and into the game against New Orleans on Tuesday night as well for the basketball side of things. But now also, and I want to remind you guys, CBS All Access is included in your Pony Stampede subscription. So for a $99 value that you used to have to pay separately for, it's now included in 24/7 sports subscriptions. 10,000 shows on demand. You can stream live TV, whether it's your local CBS station or it's your, you know, CBS Sportsnet or what have you. SEC Game of the Week, NFL football, you can stream it with CBS All Access, which is now included in your Pony Stampede subscription. Try us free for 7 days. Check out CBS All Access. Check out our VIP tidbits and see what you think. Then you can decide if you want to pay monthly or the annual. So look, with that, guys, going to wrap up the podcast. Quick, just a reminder, we're going to have another pod this week. Steven Igo is going to preview East Carolina with us. He's with our East Carolina 24/7 sports site. And then we're also going to talk a little recruiting. We'll preview homecoming game, of course, as well on our end. And then SMU is going to hit the recruiting trail later in the week. Sonny Dykes is going to be out. So, like I said, pick up that Pony Stampede subscription to see where Coach Dykes is heading out to, see what players he's going to be scouting. With that, I'm going to wrap up the pod. Hope you guys have a great rest of the week. And thanks for listening.
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Dan Orlovsky, are you still a Jaden Daniels is the best quarterback available in the draft guy?
I think the three things that make it stand out for me are, number one, I think his ball placement versus man coverage is the best in the draft. Every quarterback in the NFL is accurate. He's got the best on tape. Number two, most transferable stuff to the NFL. And then I think the third thing is pocket peace.
Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.